Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Discussions with Delia Farquharson. Delia is a licensed social worker and experienced life coach, dedicated to helping you achieve your goals and become your better self. She specializes in helping others identify the connections between your thoughts, feelings, and actions. Welcome, Delia.
Good evening, radio listeners, and thank you for joining us for another exciting episode of Discussions with Delia. I want to thank you for joining us, and before we get started, I want to give you the call-in number, and I encourage you to use the number. This is, after all, a discussion show, so we want to hear from you. Call in with what's on your mind, what thoughts are generated by our discussion, so we want to hear from you. Our call-in number is 619-639-4621, and right now we're broadcasting live, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. So thank you again for joining us. And before we go further, I want to once again introduce my fabulous, awesome guest co-host, Raymond.
Hello.
Hi, sweetie. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
So today we have interesting things in the news.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday was the debate between de Blasio and Loda for the New York City mayoral race.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the story of a young man, 19-year-old college student, who was arrested for buying a belt, a Ferragamo belt in
Barney's
New York,
mm-hmm.
for $300 because they didn't think he fit the profile. He could afford it.
Mm-hmm.
So he was arrested for trying to buy something that with money that he earned. So what say you?
I guess it would have been surprising if it no longer happened. And the good thing is, it made the news so that people are aware that it's still happening. It's not a myth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's 19.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's really sad, I think. It's very sad. He seemed like a fine young man, you know, delivered himself very well on the news, made his folks proud.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a hardworking boy. He said everything is legit. I work for this money. So I'd like to talk about, you know, we have a guest who should be calling in a little while. And it's a really interesting topic that we have scheduled for today. And the topic has to do with immigration. And more specifically, undocumented children. And what happens to children who are undocumented in this country and, you know, the perils they face. One of the things that I find really alarming, surprising, is the number of children, undocumented children, who are locked up, incarcerated with their parents when their parents are detained. And it's an alarming number of young children, varying ages. So we look forward to having, you know, to having our guests talk about, you know, because that's what she does. She's an immigration lawyer and more intimately aware of this topic than we are. But I'll just share some of the statistics with you. And it's really alarming, like I said, really alarming. But between October 2011 and October 2012, it says some 31,000 juveniles were apprehended by the Border Patrol.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, an alarming number of them, once they're caught, are detained for long periods of time, some for days, some for weeks, some for months. And one case that I read about, a young man was detained for a decade. He was detained when he was 15 and remained detained for 10 years. So it's really alarming. So,
really?
Mm-hmm. So it's really surprising to me, these statistics.
Right. But in terms of, I mean, I'm not familiar with the law per se. Is there an age thing that says a child below a certain age, or
mm-mm.
It's any child?
It's any
child. That's here undocumented.
Yeah.
Regardless of how old they are.
It says, you know, with the statistics that I'm looking at, and this is from Mother Jones, but between October 2008 and November 2012, there were 2 children younger than the age of 10 who were detained. There were 35.
Say that again.
2 children younger than the age of 10.
Mm-hmm.
35 children, 13 and 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And 15 and 16-year-olds, 406.
Mm.
And older than 16, 17-year-olds, it was 919.
Wow.
Right. So during that time, you know, the detentions range from 3 to 7 days, and 374 children were detained for that period.
Mm-hmm.
8 to 30 days, 592 for that period. 31 to 180 days, 371 children. And longer than 180 days, 19 children were detained. So, I mean, really.
Does it tell you about the distribution in terms of, I mean, I'm assuming a lot of these, I mean, I don't know if it's a fair assumption that most of these occur along the border states. And,
it is.
Hmm.
Texas accounts for the majority of the detentions of undocumented immigrants and undocumented children. So Texas and Arizona account for most of them.
But I guess it's across the board, though, in terms of if children of, I mean, we're from the Caribbean, and if their parents and if their children here are from Jamaica, Trinidad, Barbados, or wherever else in the world you'd like to think, they themselves would be subjected to just the same, where these children are arrested and held in jail.
Yeah, in detention,
in
immigration detention facilities. Yeah, so.
Wow. Yeah, but I mean, I guess that's, I mean, at the time when you make these decisions, I guess as a family or, you know, it's a personal decision, but the impact is so severe. Just imagine your 5, 6, 10, 12-year-old being detained for something that they never did or they're not, they had no control over. And I guess
because I think that was one of the things I know Tanya was pointing out in her introduction that she sent to us, is the fact that some of these children are brought here really young, or they come here really young, and they often are surprised to learn that they themselves don't have legal status.
Mm-hmm.
And that results in isolation, in this confusion, you know, in just trying to navigate the system.
Yeah.
You know, in a system where you know, everybody else around you, your peers, your cohorts, all fit in and mostly fit in and can do whatever they choose, go on to college, do whatever, and you can't do that because you're limited by this, by not being documented.
Right. I remember a piece, I don't remember what news program it was on, where the fellow, for the first time in his life, realized that he was undocumented when he was applying for college. And it was then and there that he realized that his life wasn't what he thought it was.
Yeah.
And he did not have access to the things that everyone else did.
Yeah.
Though in his heart he was an American, he grew up here his entire life and had no option, had no reason to think otherwise.
Right. So how many undocumented children and youth do you think live in America?
Well,
take a guess.
Undocumented in the United States, well, as reported, and these things are usually underreported, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. 75,000.
Nope.
Go ahead.
It says here, according to the American Psychological Association, that there are more than 1 million children under 18 and 4.4 million young people under 30 who live in the America, who live in America undocumented.
Yeah. Say that one more. How many children? 1 million
children under 18.
Under 18.
And 4.4 young people. 4.4 million young people under 30.
Wow.
So, you know, the American Psychological Association did a piece on, you know, the impact, the effects,
mm-hmm.
psychological effects of being undocumented.
Right.
So they chronicled the experiences of 3 young people
mm-hmm.
and looked at the negative impact that, you know, their undocumented status had on their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And one young person, I think, from you know, the Far East,
right.
Talked about it was like being in an invisible prison.
Mm-hmm.
It was like being in an invisible prison. So, you know, it's really interesting to.
I'm sure it's just devastating. It's like
right. It does. It does.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna introduce now our special guest. Tanya, are you there?
I am here. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I am well. Thanks for asking.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'm so happy that you were able to join us.
Yes, thank you for joining.
Oh, yeah. It's my pleasure to join you guys.
Yeah. So, Tanya, the topic that you have brought to us is really, really interesting, and I've been taking a look at some of the statistics and some of the information surrounding this, and it's really providing me with an education. What do you want to say about this topic?
Well, you know, this topic touches so many people, and there's a lot to be said, you know, but what I think I really would like to say to, you know, the people who are affected or people who have this type of circumstance is to really try to find a way to get your documents, you know, just try to find a way to get your documents. You may have to, you know, solicit some kind of a professional help for it, but you have to try to find a way to get your documents.
But Tanya, I mean, in New York, I listen to the radio, and I mean, just full disclosure, Tanya is also my cousin, so that just in fear of disclosure. You know, I listen to the radio, I listen to every attorney come on all these Caribbean radio programs offering all kind of services, you know, to folks who have different needs, this being one of them, right? And they're asking people to come in and trust them and pay them money to solve their problems. And, you know, I've heard different horror stories where folks have paid money, invested in trying to get their families out of their situation and coming away with less than desired results. I mean, so I guess one of they have to trust the system that it will work because they themselves are illegal.
Well, there are a couple of options, and a lot of times people may not choose the route that is probably most cost beneficial or more secure. For example, every country has a consulate office, all right? Mm-hmm. For example, like the Jamaican consulate is there in New York on 3rd Avenue, I believe, and mm-hmm. they provide services for their Jamaican citizens who are here. And that's how some people get to renew their passport and so on, you know. And so they have services, that certain documentation. Also, I know that some countries now offer online registration where you can actually order your birth certificate online, pay for the FedEx fees and so on, and they actually will mail it to you.
Okay.
So sometimes it may be hard for you to go outside of the country, and trust me, I can tell you, I know so many people who have given cousins, you know, thousands. By the time the money adds up, it's
mm-hmm.
thousands and thousands of dollars for a birth certificate that is less than 2,500 Jamaican dollars to get, you know what I mean? Until you get billed for taxi fare and other fees to go to a vital records office, I mean, it's unconscionable. You also have to look at when you go for services. You can't just go to somebody and say, I trust you. Here's all my money. I trust you'll do what you're supposed to do, because there are so many people who are unscrupulous. There's so many notarios and even some people who say we're attorneys, but they're not. So you really have to do your homework to check to make sure that the person that you are doing business with is a credible person, you know, that is duly licensed. And if you pay for services that somebody tells you we can do and then they take your money and it's not done, then you have to be able to say, well, you know what, this person has to be accountable to some bar association or some grievance panel that I can take my concerns to and it can be addressed. So you sort of have to really do your background, because not everyone that comes on the radio is who they say they are. You know, that's just advertisement or the media.
Right. One of the things you stressed was about finding a way for these, especially these children who you say come here as babies, some of them, and don't realize until they're much older that they are not documented. They don't have proper documents to be in the country legally. So you say find a way to get your papers. Find a way to somehow change your status. What are some of the options, based on your experience, that you find are open to, you know, I know the DREAM Act was, you know, is one of those things that's been, like, really promoted. You've seen it in the media. What are some of the ways that these young people, can access legal?
There are a couple of things. There are a couple of things. First, to get any status, it really begins with your identity. Like, what is my name? Do I have a birth certificate? Do I have a passport? Do I have any documentation or proof of my entry into the U.S., all right? And you have quite a big demographic of people who, they came here, they don't even know how they got here, because they came as babies or they were very young, under 10, and they came on... back in the day, people could come on somebody else's birth certificate, I guess. You know, there were just ways that people used to traffic in people into the country.
Right.
And so these folks are brought here, and they're just sort of left. And they go to school, you know, with whatever name they have and so on and so forth. So now you have to go back through your family. Now, some folks are lucky enough because they could go through a relative that they know to sort of, okay, do you know my mom? You know, what's my mother? You know, just really go back to get information. If you can get the information, then you could use the information that you have to sort of request your true birth certificate or get documentation, you know, from school or from family members, you know, pictures, something to say, I am John Brown's daughter. And somehow with Facebook and other things, too, a lot of people now are connecting with relatives that they've never met. So there are tools, you know, whether it's social network stuff or just through word of mouth with relatives.
Right.
Now, you know, if you cross the hurdle, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, if you cross the hurdle of getting your identification documents in and you have documents of identity, then you can decide, all right, do I have lawful immigration status or am I without status? Now, there are some people who, depending on how you enter the country, you cannot just go file the papers because the rules only allow certain kinds of people who have entered into the U.S. with visa or with inspection to file for adjustment of status in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The other people who come across the border, come through the boat, come in the trunk of a car, come in somebody else's identity and things of that nature, those people cannot just adjust status now. So you have to look at, all right, is it a possibility that I can get a waiver of this unlawful presence in the U.S., you know, by filing a 601A waiver and going back outside of the United States, you know, and get the waiver approved and get the embassy to grant you a visa to come back in.
Right.
So that is a risk, and a lot of people don't want to leave because of that.
Right.
So then you have the under 30 group of people who are eligible for the DACA, And that doesn't even give you status if it's approved. You only get a work permit and a social security number so that you can work and go to school. So a lot is riding on this new immigration reform for those people who are kind of stuck in that, you know, group of folks that are just really stuck. So we have to kind of see what's going to happen there. There are some people who can prove that they were inspected, they came with some kind of a visa or I-94 card that shows that they came through the airport. And at least some of those folks now can get married, you know, because they've lived here. So, of course, they're going to have U.S. citizen children. They're probably married to U.S. citizens and, you know, could get status through that. But it's really complicated.
Right, right. And I'm just thinking about it for these students who perhaps came in with, you know, uncertain identity and then going to school in somebody else's name and then trying to reconcile all of those records. I mean, that's got to be some complication.
It is. It is. But, I mean, it's something that you're going to have to face sooner or later anyway. So if you're in the situation, you're probably best served kind of planning and putting your stuff together, you know what I mean? Because better to have a plan and be able to deal with the problem when you have to address it than to have a problem and no plan.
Right.
So my suggestion would be if you're in the situation, you really need to start getting your documents, planning, you know, doing things of that nature. There's some people who, you know, I've dealt with who they've been here as a child and they basically have to apply to, like, a probate court to do a change of name because nothing they had was in the
name.
Yeah, like their real name, they have nothing in that name. So now they have to do an also known as.
You could have a high school diploma and everything in a
name
that's
right.
Not really you or does not, you know what I mean? It's just really.
I guess it's really totally a complicated thing because I'm thinking, listening to you talking, I'm saying a child at 16, 17 years old, looking to become the person who they really are, you know, that could rip the family apart because the parents themselves probably don't want to be exposed or feel vulnerable or feel as if it's probably not the best thing to do because the outcome might not be favorable.
For them.
Right.
Right.
And it has criminal liability and all of that, but at some point it's one of these things because now you have adults. Just think of people who were teenagers when all of this is happening. Family didn't do anything to help. Now they are 40 with children, and they cannot work. They cannot, you know, and basically they're just bumming around. So, you know, it's stuck. So you really have to come up with some way to become unstuck. I mean, obviously, if something happened when you were a child, I believe that some provisions of the law, sometimes they are very lenient on children who basically did not have a say-so in how they got here or what's been going on. So sometimes if you plan and you could prove that you're not the culpable person or this happened or you're a victim of a certain type of thing, then, you know, maybe you could achieve what you need to have by presenting your circumstances in the proper light.
Right. I think the first thing, you know, like you said, Tanya, you know, if you're stuck in this dilemma, then the first thing is to kind of overcome that fear, to kind of be ready to expose yourself because this is makes you so vulnerable, you know. So you have to be prepared to kind of like expose that you are not who you always thought you were or people thought you were and that you're in this place. So, you know,
you have to do it. And it may not be like a public exposure, but it may be that you have to go to the proper forum if you can get the assistance to decide where you need to go to address this so that, and that's why a lot of people have been doing the also known as like, you know, I was born as John Brown, but now I'm also known as John Black. You know, so it's one document that pretty much confirms the identity of the individual with a different name. Our legal system allows for that, you know, but you have to be able to present what your circumstances are so someone can make the determination that, okay, you're not just trying to change your identity because you're wanted for crimes and now you want to, you know, change stuff around like that.
You know, it does really explain a lot for me because I always wondered why they, you know, a lot of these legal things ask you if you ever had any other
name. Yeah, you're
and
right.
I, you know, I'm always like wondering why did they
right.
ask
that? I mean, because when they ask, it's like, I'm thinking you're asking this of a woman being her
right.
maiden name, but why are you asking me?
But now it throws that in
it
a different
sense.
Light to me, So.
Oh, yeah, there are a lot of people who've changed the names. And you have to remember, too, like, especially in this country, there are people who actually have gone to the hospital in one name and all their children are born under somebody else's name or they got married in, like, the, you know. It's a mess. It's a mess.
It is.
But it's a fixable mess. It's just a matter of how and how much people are willing to go to get it fixed.
Right, and I think that's the takeaway, Tanya, that it, you know, as complicated as it seems and as difficult as it likely is, you know,
mm-hmm.
for people who are in this situation,
mm-hmm.
that it is fixable. You know, with the proper kind of guidance and help, that this can be sorted out.
Right.
Is that
I mean, we've sorted things out. I mean, you're not going to be able to sort everybody's thing, but I believe that if you're in a particular situation and if you can present yourself, you know, the proper way, you should be able to get somewhere. If anything at all, you should be able to get your proper identity. And
exactly.
That's what that is, you know?
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like you said, that's the first thing. Being able to be authentic in your identity is really, and that's a big step. Just to be able to say, it is. Yeah. You know,
I'm just saying for the whole thing.
Go ahead.
Hello? No, I was just saying, just think of the whole thing and what it is for the community, because now you have relatives not even knowing that they're related.
Right.
Which is another topic.
It unfolds.
Yeah.
But I really want to thank you because I think that this is really very interesting. So
I think it's things we hear on the news and you know, but when you talk about it in this context and from your perspective, that it actually
as an immigration attorney,
right, mm-hmm. and it affects people, real people. So thank you so much for coming on and discussing this with us. And
I'm bringing us this topic.
It's enlightening for me, for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some things you just gloss over and, you know, but hearing it from your perspective and listening to it for real, it does make a difference.
Right. And it certainly has increased my understanding of the situation. So I want to thank you so much for sharing this with us and bringing us this topic, Tanya.
My pleasure. You're welcome. Take care, guys.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I mean, you listen on the news all the time. You hear immigration issues that affect families and, you know, but then you think of children and how they are impacted. And you hear that on the news as well. And, you know, for the moment, you're like, oh, boy, that must be rough. And then you move along, you know. But when you're in that place, it's hard. It is absolutely hard. So,
it certainly gave me a better understanding of the situation. And I think, you know, like that's the takeaway. If nothing else, if you can establish who you truly are, who you are, and what your identity is,
that's
awesome.
Yeah,
so,
because I mean, you never have to think about. You think you say who you are, but you're actually somebody else.
Yeah. So I want to thank you for listening, and bring us your topics. Call in with whatever you want to discuss. You know, with your feedback on the conversations and the discussions we've had.
Right.
Remember, our call-in number is 619-639-4621.
Right. All the things that you sit on, you know, call us and let's talk about it. You know, it's a topic for conversation. It's a discussion. Right. Thank you very much for listening.
All right. So until next time, peace and blessings.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Discussions with Delia. Check us out on the web at discussionswithdelia.com and like our Facebook page, Discussions with Delia. Please follow me on Twitter at @discussiondelia. Thank you again for listening. Peace and blessings.